Now it'll start recording. This is the test tape that I lifted.
All right. Well, again, I want the piece of paper to say, you know,
hit red and green.
Hit red and green to record.
Bring them both down.
No. I mean, I must have done just.
Okay, this is an oral history with Hal Sargenti. This is the fourth session. It's on the 11th of January, 2002.
We started this in 1998.
Hal, would you like to talk a little more about your family background?
Yeah, I think there's a few things, Arnold, that maybe we can weave into the previous work that we've done. And I think we need to update, you know, we have something on the awards and honors, and I guess I have since gotten another doctorate from Drexel.
Yeah. And, when was that, Hal?
Let me get it here. And so that would be, my fourth, I think, doctorate, which is kind of nice. This one is a doctorate of engineering. And that was in 1999. And then in 1998, I was recipient of the Purple Aster Award from the Sons of Italy. But the most significant thing...
What is that? What's the nature of that award?
It's an award that honors someone of Italian-American heritage who's achieved a fair amount of... business success, but also has contributed significantly to the community. So that was great fun. But the most significant thing since then has been in 2000. I received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor. I don't know if you know anything about that, but
no. Tell me about it.
Each year, the National Ethnic Coalition of Organizations Foundation gives 100. Outstanding people who are nominated the Ellis Island Medal of Honor, and then they introduce your name into the congressional record, and there's a wonderful ceremony on Ellis Island with a big dinner and honorary color guard and the Marine Corps band, and it's really a production, and then it finishes with fireworks in the bay in Lower New York Harbor as you sail back from Ellis Island to Lower Manhattan. So that was quite nice and very enjoyable. So those are the three other things that have happened since we last talked. But a couple of other things. I finally did retain somebody to trace back my father's family, and we talked a lot about my mother's family and where they were from, and as a matter of fact, I had visited the location of my mother's family, where my mother was from, the little town in Italy, and I think we talked about that. And knew very little about my father's family, and in talking to one cousin who's still alive, she had a card that her father used when he worked at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and on that card it had place of birth, and it had something like Siffoni or something like that. It was a C-I-F-F-O-N-I, and of course there was no place in Italy named that. And but the only other piece of information we had was that I remember my uncle, who was my father's brother, older brother, talking about Salerno, that he went back to Salerno to visit the family. And so then I was searching the web, and I found a site called myitalianfamily.com, and there was a young woman who started this business. She had gone to the London School of Economics and went back to Italy after getting her MBA and wanted to start a business, and her name was Bianca, let me see, I forget the other name, but I will find it, and because I have it, her name was Bianca, and she searched this out, and indeed found from that little bit of information that my grandfather was born in a place called Gifoni, G-I-F-F-O-N-I, Valle Piana, V-A-L-L-E-P-I-A-N-A, which is in the near about 20 miles from Salerno. So lo and behold, there they were. And my grandfather's name, it turns out, was Pasquale, and he married a woman that, and her name was Nicoletta, and which explains a lot, because in the family, my uncle's son was named Pasquale, and his daughter was named Nicoletta. And I never knew where those came from, but now we know. And it turns out that that my grandfather came here in 1893 and settled in Brooklyn. And he sent for his oldest son, which was my Uncle Andrew, who came in 1901, 8 years later. So it took him 8 years to get the money together to send for his family. And his oldest son came on a ship called the SS Liguria. That docked on June 13th, 1901. And then his mother and another son came on February 27th, 1902 on the SS Lombardia. And they lived first on Hudson Street, which is a street near the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and then on Bridge Street. And so all of that begins to tie together, because I talked to my brother, and he remembered as a child being taken to visit them near the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And Hudson Street backs right up to the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And my cousin also remembered that they had a restaurant there near the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and they lived upstairs from the restaurant. And so I actually drove, when I was taking a limo to New York one day, had them swing by under the Brooklyn Bridge and find Hudson Street. The buildings were no longer there. There was a big school there, but Hudson Street was there, but it only went up to 47, not 157. But they also had, by 1903, a couple of years later, they had an address on Bridge Street in Brooklyn as well. So that was interesting. And of course, their backgrounds were there as they were not educated people when they came over, and so forth. But it was interesting to find the town is a very lovely town from the pictures that that were sent, and they have a film festival there apparently, and whatnot. So I do have another place I have to visit, and at this point, and I've been close to it several times, because we go to Positano, that whole Amalfi Coast area. Mm-hmm. Solano is the port where the Americans landed. Mm-hmm. You remember?
Yeah.
During the war. So we have a little family tree that goes back to another Pasquale Sorgenti, who was born, I think, in 1780, and had a son named Andrea, who married, and then had the Pasquale, who was my grandfather. It's interesting. My daughter's middle name is Andrea, which so these names, although I didn't realize it, go way back to. That clearly was the custom, I guess, from that standpoint. So now I have to retrieve ship's registries from these people. So
yes,
and I have also now a copy of the ship's registry from my mother, which was the princess came over on the Princess Irene, and. Which was very nice. To find that, she traveled under her maiden name, so that's what made it so difficult to find. And her maiden name was Conti. And you see, the interesting part about that looking for Bianca's name here, and I can't read. I can't read what her name is, although I have a signed letter. Money knows, and I'll ask him. What was I saying? She traveled under the maiden name, and that made it difficult to find. But the interesting thing in the ship's manifest is one of the last columns over asks the question, is do they have $50? And if they don't, how much do they have? Well, in 1903, $50 was an enormous amount of money. And my grandmother had the $50, but each of her children only had 10. And it's right over in one of these columns right here. And that, to me, was quite amazing, that you needed that much money to get in. And so she had 50, and each of the boys had 10. And then you had to have somebody that was going to meet them, and they give the address of where they're going. So, which is quite interesting. This is very difficult to read, but they said that was the best possible copy they could make. But anyway, so since we last night, I've done some more looking into all of this, and it was kind of interesting to have that background. The only other item in going back and reading through the three previous sessions...
There's even a column Hal says whether a polygamist.
Does it? I can't read it.
Yes, so and whether an anarchist.
Do you want any of these documents incorporating with the final version of the history?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, then we'll work with you on that in due course.
Yeah, and but you see, it says over here, is she in possession of $50? And if not, how much?
Yes.
Well, that's a staggering sum of money.
Yes, yes.
In 1903. And she's here, and she's shown that that she has, maybe she doesn't, maybe it's 30, it looks like 50. But her sons have 10, 10, and... and a couple more tens. So between them, they had about either $90 or $70.
So the by 1903, there were how many of them had arrived in total?
Well, my grandfather was already here with one son, and so he was working to save them the money. So I also know that they had somebody that traveled with them. As my mother shown here is a Mafalda Lucia's suckling child, and but there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus one was here, and then she had one more child, and mm-hmm. she got to the United States, mm-hmm. and so it was interesting. And
your father was where in that birth order?
No, that was my mother's.
That's your mother. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. My father was born here. And what these records that I have here show, which are very interesting, they show that there was another child born either immediately before or immediately after my father, named Albertus, which also explains why I had a cousin that was named Albert, mm-hmm. and a cousin who was named Irene. So...
the whole history is there if you know how to look for it.
So, which is kind of fun. So, but in going through the rereading this after so long, the one thing that was left out was that when we talked about my father, he worked at his brother's plating shop, but he always worked two jobs. He would come home at night. And he would come home at night, eat, and then immediately go out to work in a radio and appliance shop where he sold radios and appliances at night. And the man who owned that shop was a man by the name of Benny D'Angelo, who was an engineer and a very bright guy. And my father helped him in his shop and appliance repair and so on store. And I mention that because by our standards, Benny D'Angelo was very wealthy. He had a car. Mm-hmm. And he would swing by sometimes on Sunday afternoon with his wife, whose name was Helen. She was a rather tall, blonde, non-Italian girl. And she had, they had two children. And we would all pile into the back seat of his car, and they would sit up front, and we'd go for a ride in the country, which meant outside of New York City someplace, wherever that was. And the thing I remember about Danny, Benny was, it was very interesting. They were, my mother and father were very close to him for years. He was much younger than they were, and so was his wife. But to make a long story short, he would bring dates and nuts with him. That's all he ever ate. Was, as he was driving, he'd be eating this stuff that was good for you. And I'll always remember that. So my mother would say, you see, you should be eating that just like Benny and whatnot. But my entire memory, my father worked two jobs, mm-hmm. and my mother worked as also. So you know, he was very, very focused on getting us educated and doing what he had to do that. And so, but those rides were pleasant, I remember. I was thinking about that. And I was going through some old pictures the other night as we cleaned out the house for this move, and I found the picture, which I think recorded in here, of the black girl who was the daughter of my mother's friend Eloise that she worked with, that sat on my mother's dresser next to my picture. So that when I was brought up, you know, my mother had this little girl, and so last night, it was quite interesting, I was going through boxes of old pictures, and that, lo and behold, there was a picture of this. I had saved it, taken it from my mother's home when she passed away, and she had kept it all these years. So that kind of brings the family part up to date. The other thing I think that we probably should do is somehow get into that early stuff that my patents.
Yes. Yes.
And listing of what those were, and I think we put in some of the articles I had written, but the early ones, but we never did get patents and so forth. So that's what.
Do you want to go to that? Or
well, I don't. I have to make a list of them.
You need to revisit the. We should add that
territory, but it's something that we should add.
Yes, there's stuff in the polypropylene territory, isn't
there? Yeah, well? No, there's as you can see up there, 10 of them.
Yes.
And not that that's a lot, but they were significant.
Yes.
And from that standpoint, so. And that really was an important part of my career, was in research.
Yes.
And obviously the success in research led to other successes.
Led you on to the other adventures. So we'll add something about that on a subsequent occasion.
Yeah, and I'll get some of this in proper order.
Okay.
And probably go through and request the copies of the manifests of these other two ships. I'm not sure what the ship was on that my grandfather came over on, but I know the date, and you can, if you have the time, you can track that.
Yes.
And so we'll have a little family tree that we can add to this as well.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Good. Do you want to talk about Anne, and then your children?
Yeah. Well, let me ask Bonnie what the name of this young girl is.
T-T-O-N-E. Very good. Thank you.
My Italian family.
Okay.
That is what it's written about, but you couldn't tell. You didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you, will you say something about Anne's background and about how you met and about just about Anne's life?
Well, I met Anne one afternoon at a party given by the Catholic Alumni Club here in Philadelphia. And I had moved to Philadelphia from Columbus, Ohio, and didn't really know anybody, but I had met another woman that I was dating at that time at this same club. And we had just broken up, and I remember and on the way driving to the Marion Tribute House. And so...
What year is this?
This is 1960. And I'm sitting there in the Marion Tribune House. There's this big group, and it's a cocktail party and so forth. And I see coming through the door, it's rather tall, young woman with black hair. I always to say, I even remember with the dress, it was black with a brown sash. And I looked up and I said, "That's for me." And so I went over and introduced myself, and we chatted and so forth. And I asked her if she'd like to see Beckett with Richard Burton, which was playing in Philadelphia at the time. And she was very intellectually inclined. She was a school teacher, biology school teacher. And so she said, "Yeah, she'd like to do that." And I said, "Well, I'll give you a call and I'll get the tickets and so forth." Well, of course, I couldn't get the tickets. So it was sold out. But instead, we went to dinner at a restaurant in Narberth called Langerman's Luau.
Called
Langerman's Luau. It was all the rage, and very difficult, but we managed to get in, and it was very expensive, and Ann doesn't drink, and it was very expensive, and I remember when the bill came, I kind of tilted it towards her so she could get a feeling for how much money this was costing me, and it was something like $19, which in 1960 was a fortune. So we had a good time. I asked her out a second time, and we went, and then a third time, and we went to dinner up at the William Penn Inn. And we were driving down Route 309 from Flower Town, and I asked her, I said, "How would you like to get married?" And she said, "What?" And I said, she said, "Get married?" I said, "Yeah, to me." She said, "Are you some kind of a nut? I don't even know you." And I said, "Well, you're going to get to know me better." I said, "I'll give you 6 months. And, you know, but I'm 28 years old, and I want to get married. You look like a pretty good catch to me." So 6 months later, we did get engaged. And we subsequently got married. And Anne's background was she was raised in a family where her father was Hungarian, and he was a policeman. And her mother was English-Irish. And there were only two children, but lots of cousins and so forth. And she went to Chestnut Hill College.
She
was the youngest of the two children. Her sister was 7 years older. And her sister had six children as well. So
she was brought up in Philadelphia.
She was brought up in Philadelphia, and she went to Chestnut Hill College, and then she did some work down at the University of Maryland. I remember going down there in the summer to visit her while she was on a fellowship there, and it was brutal because we slept in the dormitories, and there was no air conditioning down in outside Washington, D.C. there. And she also went to the University of Wisconsin on a fellowship, and then finally got a master's degree from Temple.
In what field?
In education, you know. But she was teaching biology, and she was a science major. So,
but teaching high school.
High school.
Yes.
At Roxborough and then Northeast High. And so I remember that. In those days, I had a 1959 Chevrolet convertible with gold wings, so, you know, I was pretty proud of that. But we tooled around town with the top down and so forth. And it didn't impress her particularly, but it impressed me. So, Anne was really everything I wanted. She had great grace and elegance, and background and upbringing, and so she knew about all the things that I knew nothing about, and I was smart enough to realize that. So over the years, she has made an absolutely wonderful partner, and we've both grown rather dramatically together, and had the good fortune of being exposed to an enormous number of different things and environments and people, and I can tell you there's never anyone that that Anne works with, talks with, or gets involved in who doesn't come away thinking she's one great person, one great lady. So she's been invaluable in my career, because she's been the perfect hostess. You know, she's had strong relationships with most of the other women that were involved, with people who worked with me and whatnot. So you couldn't ask for a better partner, and indeed she always has been a partner. In her own right, you know, she does her own thing, and she has been on the Franklin Institute for more than a 20-year board. At one time, she was chairman of the Franklin Institute Research Center, I think, or maybe it was the entire Franklin Institute. But so she has been involved in a number of things, and has pretty much done those things that interest her, which center around education and children and science and so forth. Meanwhile, she's been the kind of the focal point for the family, and kept it together, because her sister died when she was young, 37 years old, and she had six children.
Mm. And she was in Philadelphia.
She was in Philadelphia, and Anne has really maintained, you know, a very close contact with all of those children, and today they're a very important part of our family. And one of those children has since passed away, same disease as her mother, breast cancer. So she's been the focal point of the family for the entire 40 years, just about, that we've been married. So. And we have an extended family, and so it's been, what more can you say than it's been absolutely great, and to have somebody to share all of those things with, and share my success with, and so that you know, a fair amount of the credit goes to her as well, because she was always there and tolerated my being away a great deal, but also participated once the children were grown and in the business around the world. And she's been just about everywhere with me.
She's traveled with you.
She's traveled with me extensively: Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, Japan.
And this is when you were doing business.
Always on business. I always brought her with me because she was such an asset. On that, even in the Orient, where women were not normally included, but it made our partners include their wives in many cases, which was unusual for the Japanese, but not so much for the Taiwanese. And as a result of that, we developed fairly strong bonds and relationships with these people who were our customers and so forth. Mm-hmm. And we still hear from them and correspond with some of them. Mm-hmm. And I'll always remember we had a visit one time with Chairman Wong. I think I talked about that. And he brought his wife and his daughter. Of course, I asked Anne to come downtown and take them around shopping and so forth, which she did. But subsequently, as we got more deeply involved with these people, we had a party at our home. And their homes aren't like ours, and we had a fire going. It was a winter night, and the chairman of this company, Chairman Wong, he was peering into the fireplace. And so finally I went over and I said, he didn't speak any English, does the chairman like the fireplace? He's wondering about the logs. And I said, well, the logs are synthetic. He said, that's what he's wondering about. He's wondering about whether he can go into that business making them. And I thought,